Good afternoon, or good morning. Good morning. Or should I say, good day?
Good day.
Good day, Melbourne. Did I say that right? Melbourne? Or I was saying Melbourne, but okay, okay. You know what I mean, right? Okay. Oh, mate. There you go. My name is DJ, and I am an alcoholic. I am a grateful drunk. I am very, very grateful. My life is totally abnormal from what it used to be like. I want to thank all you guys for showing up. It's been a fantastic weekend for me and my wife, Sue. You know, this morning I woke up, and I woke up a little bit sad, you know, because this weekend is coming to an end. But it does not stop. You know, it does not stop. I want to thank the entire Vicky Paul committee for inviting me and my wife down here. It was a long flight, and when I said when we first left, they booked us on economy. But this is how the universe worked. We got upgraded to business class, and which was, they gave us PJs and everything. We went to sleep and woke up and watched about three movies and went back to sleep and woke up and we were here. And it's so funny because, you know, Australia frowns upon ex-felons coming into the country. I had no problem getting a visa. No problem. No problem getting a visa. There was no questions even asked. You know, from my grimy, checkered past. Some places I can't go because of my past. But I guess the universe and God said, you're going to be used this weekend, and I'm going to okay your visa through customs. So that's how God works. And I was kind of nervous when I first got through here. It's like, maybe they made a mistake. Maybe they made a mistake. But I can tell you guys, God does not make mistakes. God does not make mistakes. I am so grateful that I have a God of my own understanding that does for me what I cannot do for myself. And this is a testament to the newcomers. Rely and trust in God of your own understanding, a higher power. And if you do not believe in a higher power, make sure that the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous becomes your higher power. Because I will give you an example. If we want you to leave and you want it to stay, and there's that door, we'll overpower you so you would stay. We are your higher power. If we wanted you to leave and you wanted to stay, all these people in this room right now, you could not get past us. We are your higher power. So use that, newcomers, as an example of what a higher power is. We love you until you will love yourself. We will love you unconditionally. And we don't charge you anything. Only thing we ask you to do is to give it away. As my great grand sponsor said, go out there and help somebody. You know, he was a big advocate of service. His name was Frank Honeycutt. Big advocate of service. So those who are on the ICIPA committee, I want to say thank you. This is a big, big deal. And those of you, I would like to be accessible. I want to talk to everybody. And that's what I've been doing over the weekend. I've been walking around with these newcomers drinking ginger beer, you know, and we've been talking about how to get out of our heads. What did I do? And when I tell them what I do, I did what you've done. I did what you've done. I did what you suggested that I do in order to get out of my head. I told that newcomer my story and what I've done. Because that's what you guys done to me. You guys told me your stories. When I was new to get out of my head, you told me your story and what you've done in order to maintain your recovery. And this is what my sponsor tells me to do. You have to be active in your own rescue. Develop a strong desire to serve other people. and read our literature, first 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the blueprint to a new way of life. When you look outside this door right here, they have people manning these tables. They have big books. They have 12 and 12. They have all kind of pamphlets. Buy them. Buy those books. If you can't buy it for yourself, buy it for a newcomer. Take it to a meeting and give it to them. Buy these 12 and 12s. If you haven't read it, read it. If you've read it, give it to a newcomer. You see what I'm saying? Buy those pamphlets. Those pamphlets have a lot of stuff in it because I thought I was too young to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. They have a pamphlet called, Do You Think You're Different? Yeah, I thought I was different. You know, I'm not like you. I'm different. It's circumstances, circumstances, situations, people, places, and things. But when I declared myself an alcoholic, it's not because I drink too much and I go to jails and I wake up in places I should not wake up. It's when I say that I'm never going to take another drink again. And then I take it. And then the drink takes me. It takes me to places where I do not want to be. This is beautiful. Look at us in this room. Look around. Look around the room, everybody. Just look around the room and look at all these people in this room. We are here for a purpose and a reason. We all have different backgrounds. When we go to meetings, especially we go to different meetings in different countries, you know, where I'm from, you know, I live in an area where a lot of people in the entertainment industry are in the rooms. Where I live, there's people who are on television who are in the rooms. Where I live, there's alcoholics in the rooms who've been to jails. Where I live, there's women who've done things, you know, because of the disease took them. They're in the rooms. There's judges and lawyers and doctors who are in the rooms. What place can you name, or can I name, that you get all these people from these different backgrounds will come to a room on a Sunday afternoon to find a solution? Only in Alcoholics Anonymous. We learn to live life on life terms. I've learned to live life on life terms. I've taken your examples. I've taken your suggestions. And so far, with almost 8 years of sobriety, you guys have not told me wrong. My life has flourished. I'm like a rose in the concrete. I grow. My life is amazing. I call it abnormal. And because I call it abnormal is because the fact of the matter is I don't go to jail any longer. But when I do go to jail, it's only for an hour and I have a visitor's badge. So I get a chance to carry the message to where I received it. It is my responsibility as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous to carry this message to where I received it. It is your responsibility as members of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to carry this message to those who are suffering. Service is the roadmap to spirituality. It keeps me right here and out of right here. I'll say that again. Service work is the blueprint and roadmap to spirituality. It keeps me right here in my heart and out of my head. It keeps me active in my own rescue. My service work talks me into my recovery instead of talking me out of it. My service work feeds my soul. Feeds my soul. Every cell of my being rejoices when I go do something. But sometimes, like when I'm in that traffic, I'm like, I'm ready to make a U-turn, you know. But this is beautiful. It feeds my soul. Every man and woman in this room has a story to tell, and I guarantee it. there's somebody somewhere in some treatment center, in some meeting, in some prison is waiting to hear you tell their story. You will be that man or that woman with a pink box walking across that yard. And there's going to be an inmate that's going to watch and say, wow, it must be donuts in that box. And they're going to follow you, and you're going to offer them a donut, and you're going to tell their story, and they will be convinced. You know, it's important to remember that we've all been in a prison of our own making. You don't have to be in a prison with barbed wires and guard towers. You don't have to be that. Some of us have been locked in our own prisons of our own making. We've created our own guard towers in our homes. We've created our own 40-foot walls, in our homes. That's where the disease takes me. And I'm sure if you're in this room, it is taking you too. The program says there is a solution. There's a vision for you into action and how it works. This program, I believe, was ordained by a higher power to save us. And God works through people. God works through people. And God worked through those two men, Bill and Bob, two alcoholic drunks, and said, man, we got to stop this. We got to save people. So they became active in their own rescue. They got out of their comfort zone. They went to Skid Row. They carried the message. And some received it. Some didn't. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But this is what happens. It is my responsibility and it is your responsibility to carry this beautiful message and say, oh, how life can be once we give ourselves and we do this selfishly and accepting nothing. Don't expect nothing. This weekend, I walked around with newcomers. We had a blast. I said, man, he's like, DJ, I'm all in my head right now. I said, what's going on, brother? He said, man, I don't feel comfortable. I said, how many days do you have? He said, 40. I said, you're supposed to be feeling like that, man. You know, you're supposed to be feeling like this right now. He said, I don't know how to say hello to people. I don't know how to do this. I said, what we're going to do, man, we're going to walk around. We're going to introduce ourselves to everybody. Come on, walk with me, dog. Come on. And that's what we did all weekend. I think it was Saturday. We walked around in the hot sun, and we said hello to everybody. I said, this is so-and-so. And they were like, how you doing? I'm so-and-so. They're like, how you doing? I'm an alcoholic. I said, he's new, and he's sober today. And he started laughing with that nervous laugh. But everybody should know his name now. And hopefully that he will walk away with something. That when you're in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you don't know somebody, stick your hand out and tell me your name. I am new, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm here. You know, we're going to love you, man. We're going to love you until you're able to love yourself. I'm going to give you my experience, and they're going to give you their experience. You know, we had a dance last night. We party like rock stars. They had the strobe lights last night, the fog. They had everything, you know. And we had a blast last night. And I can tell you, I woke up and remembered everything. You know, I woke up where I was supposed to wake up, in my hotel room with my wife. You know, this is what happens. We had a blast last night. You know, so this is some of the stuff that I want to share with you. And those who didn't get a chance or who didn't make it Friday or yesterday, and I was telling my wife, Susan, I'm like, these people, I know they're going to be tired of just hearing me, you know, they're going to be text messaging on Facebook or something, you know, but I am totally grateful. My name is DJ, I'm an alcoholic, my sobriety date is July 3rd, 2005. I'm from the Long Beach area of California. I'm my mother's only son. I have a father, but I never met him in person. Never met him in person. And I've always felt defected. I never felt a part of. I never felt like I existed. I never felt that God was actually there for me. I could not speak when I was a child. I could not speak as I was a child. And the funny thing about it is I became a motivational speaker because of you guys speaking from behind the podium. I get to help people. But the fact of the matter is that my deeply ingrained negative thoughts had caused me to do things I should not be doing. It caused me to withdraw. Like a newcomer would sit in the back of the room and say, I'm different. Well, I felt different. I didn't know there was a solution to how I felt when I was a child growing up. So, you know, what happened was my mother, she has two daughters she had to look out for. So what happened was when I became a certain age, I gave my life and my will to the care of my neighborhood. I gave my life and my will to the care of my gang. I gave my life and my will to the care of the streets. I loved my hood. I thought I loved my hood. My neighborhood was held hostage. You could not come outside at nighttime. We ran the streets. We were lawless and reckless. I thought I found my path, what I am supposed to be doing. I was empowered by one of my homeboys and said, we gonna call you Casper the Ghost. Because I wasn't dark enough. A lot of my homeboys teased me when I was growing up because of my racial background. My hair wasn't curly enough. My skin wasn't dark enough. I hated myself. I was not comfortable in my own skin. But my homeboy, he gave me my new name, Casper the Ghost. I got that tattooed on my body. And that's the identity that I chose to take until I got sober. My big homeboys, my OG homeboys, they taught me things what a father would teach a son. They taught me how to shoot guns, how to load guns, how to alter a pistol. They taught me how to manufacture contraband. They taught me how to ship it, how to sell it. They taught me how to drink. They taught me manipulation. I was rewarded for violence. But every time I committed an act, I was loaded, I was drunk. Because deep down inside of me, I was filled with fear, and I could not do what I was doing with a sober state of mind. I paid consequences for my actions. Acts of violence have been given to me. I've been stabbed, poked with screwdrivers, shot in the back. I learned how to survive in the streets. My OG homies didn't tell me how to live. They taught me how to survive. But years later, when I got sober, you men in these rooms became my father figures. I have a whole bunch of father figures. It affects me in a way that I get emotional because all I wanted was a father to show me something. But when I got sober, you men loved me. You guys taught me how to present myself. You guys taught me how to dress. You guys taught me how to be a father. Well, I'm going to be a father. You guys taught me everything that I know. And you beautiful women in these rooms, you taught me how to love a woman, how to treat a woman, how to be friends with a woman. And look at women as my equal. My homeboys didn't teach me this. They didn't teach me any of that. The same ones that groomed me were the same ones that betrayed me. I left high school. I was a drinker. Back in the day, we were drinking Super Soco and gin, 40 ounces, Mad Dog 2020, Night Train, all that bottom stuff. I never drank any good stuff, you know, gin and juice. This is the drinks of choice where I'm from. And we drank. And we drank. I'll miss school because of hangovers. You know, alcohol became my solution. It made me a part of. I can talk to women. I can be the, you know, the go-to guy. I depended on that every day because this is what I was shown. It made my deeply ingrained negative thoughts disappear. I was okay. I was tall enough. My skin was dark enough. My hair was curly enough. I had enough of everything. I was all right. The streets loved me. The streets took care of me. My gang took care of me. My homeboy took care of me. But I'm going further down a rabbit hole. Now, am I an alcoholic? My broke brain is telling me no. I'm not an alcoholic because I got stuff. Alcoholics push shopping carts. My broke brain is telling me that's what they do. My broke brain is telling me that alcoholics sleep on the bridges in abandoned cars. What my broke brain tells me is that an alcoholic panhandles in front of a liquor store. That's what my broke brain tells me. But I never knew that there was a solution because every time I put that first one in me, something goes wrong. I don't know how to get buzz or sip. I have to drink it all. There's no limit for me. I have to continue to drink this to get this effect so my perception of life and how I feel about myself and people, place, things, circumstances, situations will change. I have to do this. It fed me. But it was taking me somewhere I do not want to go. And I'm sure you in this room possibly felt similar feelings of when we drank. When I found out that we first went to the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, very, very profound. I will share them with you. And when he said there's a solution, there is a solution to this ease. It says almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confessions of our shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others when we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved. There was nothing left for us to do but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much heaven and have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence like we not even dreamed. Not even dreamed. Because of the self-searching, because of the leveling of our pride, and because of the confessions of our shortcomings. This is what happened. And from there, you laid the simple kit of spiritual tools and you laid them at my feet. And because you laid these simple tools and because of your examples, I found much heaven. And that's what we do. We got to show these newcomers that it works if you work it and it won't if you don't. We got to give these newcomers these simple kit of spiritual tools and we got to lay them at your feet. Simple kit of spiritual tools and lay them at your feet, newcomers. Those of us who've been through the steps. This is our responsibility. This is our service work. This is what was done for me. You gave me a simple kit because I'm a complicated man. And you gave me a simple kit of spiritual tools and you lay them at my feet. And because of that, I found much heaven. It's because you taught me the confessions of my shortcomings. I'm going to come to you. I'm going to have 14 legal yellow tab papers. And we're going to sit down. We're going to drink some ginger beer. We're going to drink ginger beer. And I'm going to tell you everything about me. But first, I have to internalize this step one. That I am powerless over alcohol. My life become unmanageable. I have to internalize that. Make it a part of my everyday being. Everyday activities. See, I can't talk to this to my homeboys about this. I can't tell my homeboys about this. I'm scared. I don't know how to live, homie. You know, what do I do, dog? I'm shook up. I want to stop drinking, but I don't know how. I got messed up ways. I'm tired of being like this. I'm tired of having my family saying, "You've always been like that. You've always been like that. Ever since I've known you, you've always been like that." I was telling some friends outside that one particular day, it was a Thanksgiving back in the 80s, that they were having Thanksgiving, and they were having it right here, right? So I show up right here knowing that they're having the Thanksgiving dinner over here because they don't want me around. You know what I said? The hell with them. I'm going to go hang out with my homeboys. And what do we do? We have Thanksgiving with a whole bunch of wild turkey, you know. And the same thing happened again. So therefore, my family loved me. They didn't want, the universe knows I'm not supposed to be living like that. You see what I'm saying? So this is what happens. So my family's like, we can't be around you anymore. You can't come around us anymore. We don't want you around us anymore because you always been like that. You always cause trouble when you, every time you come over. You have too much to drink because why? My deep ingrained negative thoughts come out. Don't know how to get rid of them. I don't know how to get rid of my deeply ingrained negative thoughts until I got sober. Self-searching, leveling of pride, confessions of shortcomings. It's okay, I don't know my father. It's okay. It's okay, I'm not dark enough. It's okay. It's okay, my hair is not curly enough. It's okay. It's okay, I ain't got enough money. That's all right. I have enough. Everything is perfect. Because of my lack of experience, I did not know this. I'm thinking that I got to be like the Joneses. I got to have what you got. But I can't have, I got to work for some of that stuff. So therefore, my homeboys, what happened from there is that I gave them a lot of drugs to sell because that's what I did for a living. I sold drugs for a living and I drank and I abused people. This is what my life consisted of. I wasn't a vision for you, put it like that. So what happened was, I was 19 years old. It was February 6, 1990. My home was surrounded by the DEA, which is the Drug Enforcement Administration. They came to get me, and the ones that groomed me into the way of life was the ones that set me up with the feds. And make a long story short, I was arrested. I was 19. This was February 6, 1990. And I pled guilty to a 20-year sentence, which is 240 months of my life. And I was 19. I didn't know how to live in the now. I'd be the God concept? No. The trust? No. I didn't have no trust. Couldn't trust nobody. You know, didn't trust myself. I'm the victim. This is part of the game. This is part of the ugly side of the game. This is what happens when you do illegal acts. There is no loyalty in that. There is no loyalty in that. Trust is built when you do esteemable acts. When you're on a chairman committee, you know, committee on a chair, you know, a panel, you know. The thing we do is we help somebody else. You know, we party, we have fun. We build trust. We build friendships in recovery. We build families in recovery. This is what we do. So after that, I pled guilty to 240 months, which is 20 years, and I continued my same behaviors. Because why? They sent me to the penitentiary. Am I scared? No, I'm really pissed off. But when I hit the yard, all my homeboys was there. The ones that start missing from the streets, where so-and-so, they start missing from the streets, and we're getting picked off one by one, sometimes in groups. And soon as we hit the yard, they're right there like, what's up, homie? What's going on? Like, man, it's like, what's going on, dog? Oh, man, how much they give you? Man, they gave me 20, man. How much they give you? Man, they gave me life and 30. Damn, how much they give you? You know, I got 45. How much they give you, man? They just gave me a dime. You know, it's like, man. So it's like, how are these dudes accepting this stuff? Accepting life and 30. Accepting all this. Let me give you a care package. Let me give you a knife. You know, let me show you where the homies hang out. Let me give you this some smokes, you know, some Zuzus and Wham Whams. Zuzus and Wham Whams like candy and stuff, you know, Top Ramen and stuff like that. You know, and all this stuff, and you know, and as soon as we hit the yard, you know, we're gonna go get loaded right now. So the homies is in waiting for you. So I go in there, man, you know, 19-year-old kid and just really, really bitter and angry. And I got loaded, and prison guard told me to do something. I'm like, I'm not doing nothing. You can't make me. I'm self-will. Don't you know who I think I am? My homeboys know me. You don't know me, you better ask somebody, you know? My ego was still out there, because why? I was a 19-year-old kid with $500,000 in cash. I was a rich, young, stupid man, boy, but forgot that the federal government has taken everything from me. I'm poor. All I got is a big prison sentence that I got to do a day at a time. So my alcoholism increased and progressed. I got transferred to 13 different prisons in the United States and got kicked out of 10 prisons. Because it's people, places, things, circumstances, situations. It's not because I put that first one in me and don't give a damn. It's the weak homies. I shouldn't have went there. I should have went over here instead. You know, I shouldn't have did this. I should have waited just a few more minutes before I got drunk again, you know, and it's this and that. It's never that. When I get drunk, when DJ puts that first one in him, I'm a different person. I'm a different person. You know, I lack discipline. Back when I was a juvenile, I used to box, and my trainer, he said, you have a really good talent, but you lack discipline. So what he taught me was, is that because I'm not a big man, but I have the mechanics of a boxer, you know, and I was doing pretty good. And so what I should do is take what he taught me, apply it to my gangbanging, and go out and knock people out, because I knew knew the mechanics of fighting. And I was a fighter, you know. So I lack the discipline. So when you tell me to do something, it's like I'm giving you the bird, you know, and I do what I want to do. So what they do is they say, okay, we're going to put you in this 8x6 concrete cell. The only thing you're going to wear is your boxers. And we're going to leave you in there until you begin to act right, until you get some act right. So therefore, I go to another prison. So to newcomers, my life was unmanageable even in the judicial system. My life was totally unmanageable in the judicial system. But what the solution was I got to stop drinking during the week. I got to drink only in my cell. I can't drink on Sunday nights. Then that changed. Just drink only in the unit. Don't drink on the yard no more. Drink by yourself. Because it sounds crazy. I know it sounds crazy that I'm in prison and I'm drinking like I'm at a bar. Yes, yes. That's how I was drinking. It sounds insane, but it's the truth. I began to make it myself, making 40 gallons a week and milk bags, which hold 10 gallons. So I always had it. And then I ran into these guys who taught me how to distill it and make pure alcohol. And it looked just like this. Keep it in water bottles. But then get transferred again. So from there was one day I was in the day room in the Supermax in Colorado, and one of my homeboys, his name is Maniac, he's sitting next to me, and he's just sipping on a little cup, and I'm like on my third one, I'm like, hey homie, why are you abusing that alcohol right there? You know what I'm saying? You ain't drinking that. He's like, man, all I want to do is get a buzz, dog. All I want to do is get a buzz. That was my first glimpse that maybe I drink a little bit different from my fellows, as I come to find out what the big book says. Maybe I drink a little different from my homeboys. He got life in 30, never getting out. I had 14 years left. I'm drinking like there's no tomorrow. I don't want to feel this. But as my alcoholism progressed, it wasn't working anymore. It wasn't working any longer. I continued to drink and I continued to do other things. And what happened is that as some time had passed, and about another 10 years had passed, they put me in a concrete room for a year, and I'm detoxing. There is no pain worse than detoxing in a concrete box. There's nothing you can do about it. And so what I did was I told them I'm an asthmatic. I need my inhaler and I need my ephedrine. So I took 4, I took 7, I took 10, I took 14, and I OD'd in a concrete box. I was 23. I was 23 years old, 2,700 miles away from my family, in a concrete closet, in my boxers, OD'ing off Sudafed. It's crazy because the Big Book talks about that also. Bill talks about his pill use. You know, never knew this. I thought it was about alcohol, but he also talked about his pill use. That's part of my story. I almost died off pills. They're prescribed by the doctor. They're okay. I abused it. You know? So after that, I get out and I say, I'm not doing anything anymore for a very long time. I'm not doing anything for a very long time. I'm not drinking no more. I'm not doing drugs. I'm not doing anything. And the first sign of trouble was I get the chance to finally find my father. I talk to him on the telephone. He said, no, I'm not your dad. And his wife is like, send him a picture. His wife sent me a picture. You know, but I'm sober now. I've been sober for a little over 12 months, a little over a year, because I had to be sober because I'm locked in the room. I can't do anything. So I'm sober, and I say to myself that I ain't going to use no more. I'm doing push-ups again. You know, I'm doing my calisthenics. You know, I'm gaining my weight back and my bearings, and I'm not going to do this no more. I'm feeling good about myself. Actually, I did not want to leave that cell, because once I leave that cell, I'm going back out into that world, that prison world, and I don't have the tools or the experience to say no. Newcomers, when you leave a treatment center or a jail, I know you don't have the experience to say no. But the funny thing about it was, they always had Alcoholics Anonymous in those prisons. I just didn't see it. So I get the picture in the mail, you know, and I look at this picture of this man and this woman, and I say, I don't remember wearing this ugly suit. This suit is ugly. And I showed my celly, and he was like, man, that's your dad. It's a 1970s picture. You know, with the long butterfly collars and stuff like that. I never wore no stuff like that. You know, polyester double knits. You know? I don't remember wearing the suit. And I look at the picture and say, hey, split an image of this man. I called back and said, man, I don't want nothing from you. I just want to know what happened. He said, man, I'm not your father. I'm not your dad. I said, okay. Went up back to my cell, and my study was, he was mixing it up, shaking it up. I said, give me one. He said, you don't drink no more. I said, give me one, dog. Give me one. And I started again. For another 14 years. Another 14 years. Because why? I don't have the experience to deal with emotions. When you hurt my feelings, I'll fix you. I'm going to get drunk. When things don't go my way, I will fix you. I'm going to get drunk. When you don't do things I want you to do, I will fix you by getting drunk. When you have Thanksgiving dinner over here, knowing you're having it over there, and you don't invite me, I'll fix you. I'll go get drunk. And that's what happened for me. Was there a solution? No, there wasn't. My solution was forgetting deeply ingrained negative thoughts and feelings about myself. Did not know how to change them. Did not know what to do. You think I'm going to tell my homeboys, hey, homie, I'm feeling real, real foul right now, and I need to really talk to you right now. You know what I'm saying? You know what my homeboy's going to say? Here, man, go drink this, and let's go talk about this later on. You tripping right now. You can't be soft. I did not know this, because a man's not supposed to cry. A man, this is my upbringing. A man is not supposed to cry. You're not supposed to reveal this, who you really are. When you're in that prison cell, when you're in that prison yard, you put that mask on and you walk around like nothing wrong. You walk around like you got everything on lockdown. Everything is okay, but I am crying inside. This is what happens. This is what happened for me. This is my experience. This is what I've been taught. But not knowing what's going to happen in the future. So as some time passed, it was July 2nd, 2005. I'm 36 years old. With a 19-year-old mentality. I done spent half my life in the penitentiary. I grew up in the penitentiary. You taught me how to shave in the penitentiary. I was reared by the judicial system. You understand? Did not know how to live life. I knew how to survive, though. I knew how to manipulate. I knew how to get by. I knew how to do all that kind of stuff. You understand what I'm saying? But do I know how to live? No, I don't know how to live. 4 o'clock count. My jug of wine. It's 2 gallons. Boom. Drinking. I did other things also. And I nodded out in the day room at the 4 o'clock count, July 2nd, 2005. This is the day that my life would change. Not like it changed on February 6, 1990 when they gave me that 20 years. It didn't change like that. It changed when I nodded out in the day room at the 4 o'clock count. And my homeboy said, hey, Ghost, wake up, homie, wake up. Hey, Ghost, wake up, homie. And you got everybody in the room laughing, talking about, man, that dude been like that ever since I've known him. That dude been like that ever since I've known him. I heard it but could not respond to it. Every cell of my body weeped. Every cell of my body weeped. I've been in prison 16 years and I ain't changed nothing. Only thing what happened to me is I was 210 pounds and a foul reputation and a whole bunch of lockups. It's the only thing I've accomplished in my prison time. Just think about that, newcomers. Just think about that, everyone in this room. When you look up in the mirror and say, he's always been like that. He's always been like that. She's always been like that. You've always been like that, man. You ain't gonna change. You've always been like that. You ain't gonna change. We don't want you around here. You've always been like that. You know how that feels? You know how that makes me feel? Because I'm talking about it because I remember it. And I remember how I felt because I could not cry in front of a group of men. I could not do this. I was a wreck, 36 years old, with the spiritual mentality of a kid. Felt like a mistreated pit bull, just looking for love in all the wrong places. I went to my cell after that. I went to sleep. I woke up at 3:43 a.m. and I looked up and I began to pray to a God I did not believe in. One of the steps. I began to say, God, help me. God, please help me. I can't go home like this. I don't know what to do. See, back in 1982 on Easter Sunday, I stopped believing in God. I stopped believing in God of my mother's understanding. I stopped believing in God of my grandmother's understanding. I stopped believing in God, period, because why? He was never there for me. I was defected. I wasn't dark enough. My hair wasn't curly enough. I wasn't tall enough. We weren't rich enough. And God was never there for me. The ones who said that they loved me like a father would love a son, they betrayed me. My homeboys betrayed me. My gang betrayed me. Where is God? Where is God? I have resentments against a God. Because on 1982 of Easter Sunday, it was like a church and it's kind of set up, and they have an aisle down the middle, and there was a pastor coming in to bless people, and all the kids actually, and we're all lined up. This is back in the early 1982, and so they're coming in and he's blessing people, and they're falling out. He's blessing people and they're falling out. My sisters put their hands up like this, got blessed, fell out, and then it's my turn to get blessed and fall out. So he puts his hands on my head and says, and give me a prayer, and pushes me back, and I don't fall, you know. But see, because those people in front of me felt something. God loved them. God loved these people, because God works through a man who's sitting at this pulpit and who is blessing people and pushing them back, and God is coming through him and going into them and overwhelming them, and they're falling out. So God is there for them. But when it's my turn, he puts his hands on my head and pushes me back, I don't fall. He does it again, push me back, I don't fall. And he's like, okay, he rolled the sleeves up on this one, you know. Let's get this one right here. He needs some extra prayer, you know. And leans real close to my ear and tells me, just fall. It's funny now, but back then it wasn't. Because that just confirmed that you put hands, God's working through him, through you, and you put your hands on me, and nothing's happening. So I'm like, I'm confused. And then I look to my right, I looked at my mother. My mother sitting in the first row, she said, boy, you better fall. So I just took a knee. I ain't been in church since. So here I am in my prison cell praying to a God I did not understand. And said, God, would you please help me? I don't know what to do. I've got 10 months left before I go home. I have 10 months left before I go home. I haven't accomplished anything. So from there, the next morning, our unit was released for chow. So I go outside to go smoke a cigarette because I'm empty. Because something happened in that day room. Something happened when my homeboy said, he's always been like that. Something happened when my homeboy said, he's always been like that. He's always been like that. She's always been like that. Something happened. I was empty, but I was open. Something had to change. I didn't know what. Didn't know what to expect. Didn't know what to expect change. What's going to change in my life? What's going to change? Am I going to say no again? And then the first thing, I'll fix you, I'll get loaded again. I got to change it, but I did not know how. I did not know there was a solution. Did not know there was a solution. And then all of a sudden, these people started walking by. I remember like it was yesterday. They start walking. I'm looking, I'm smoking a cigarette, and I'm seeing these people walk across the yard and looking around and saying, wow, I grew up in here. I spent half my life in this environment. Oh my God. And I started to hurt a little bit. And all of a sudden I saw these people walking by the prison, with the prisoner, with the counselor. And I saw that this woman, she was carrying a pink box. And I'm looking at that pink box, blowing a cigarette, blowing clouds, and saying that there's got to be donuts in that box. I ain't had a donut in 16 years, you know? So I said, okay, I'm gonna follow them just to go get me a donut. See, I thought there were some religious people or something. I go say a few hallelujahs, a couple of amens, praise the Lord, because I'm gonna get me a donut. I walked upstairs and peeked through the window and I said, what's this? I said, what's this? And she waved me in. I said, what's this? She said, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, okay, thank you. And I walked off. I don't push brooms. I don't push shopping carts. I don't live on the bridges. I'm living in prison, but I ain't no alcoholic. know, broke brain. So she, her name is Liz. She comes out in the hallway and says, "Young man, would you like a donut?" Yeah, I would. So I went inside the room, and she gave me a donut. I got sober because of a donut. And my sponsor says attraction rather than promotion. I was attracted because I ain't had a donut in 16 years. It's so funny. So I sat in the room, and these people from H&I, people who've never been to prison, only for an hour at a time every other week. These people who are alcoholics, with, and they said it's their responsibility as members of Alcoholics Anonymous to carry this message to those who suffer. And we were suffering in that prison. But not all of us was willing to be in those rooms. I sat, and this woman, this 70-year-old woman, 70, she's a grandmother, she's a white woman, told my entire life story. What did she know about this? What did she know about this limitlessness? What did she know about when I put that first one in me? It's a done deal. What did she know about the family, the records I called from my family? What did she know about this? You understand? What did she know about that I have to do this? What did she know about that when you drink, that all your morals and standards are thrown out the window? How did she know that she has prayed to God and said, "God, if you take this from me, I will never take another drink again." And then you win the lotto and start drinking, celebrating. And then you can't stop. That's an alcoholic. You're not weak. You're an alcoholic. How does she know when I'm feeling so down on myself that I feel so victimized by society and God, people, places, circumstances, and things, that I find comfort in that bottle, of gin? Temporary comfort. Because you're an alcoholic. That's why. This woman told my entire life story. See, now, when you're in the penitentiary, I've read every book there is. I've read the Bible. I've read the Quran. I've read all kinds of spiritual books. It just didn't get it. Never knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. Never knew you guys had literature, the literature that's sitting out on that table right now. This woman said, "Okay, let's start out. Let's open up with this, with these words. And if you know it, repeat after me." She said, "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference." How profound is that? Those sentences. "God, grant me peace. Grant me serenity to accept all the things I cannot change." Profound. Newcomers, remember that. "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, and the courage to change the things I can. Give me the strength to change this stuff, to alter my future. Give me the strength to change the things I can." How powerful is that? Never heard these words before. Never knew they existed. Then from there, what happened from there was, I was convinced that I might be an alcoholic. And she says, "Keep coming back." The funny thing about it is, you guys, is that those six other men, I was the seventh man in the room, and those six other men that I used to see when I used to get loaded walking the track on the bleachers, drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, and reading this big book, I thought they turned religious or something, but they got sober in prison, and they used to have their meetings every day. We used to call them off-brands. because they're unaffiliated, they're not gang members, they're alcoholics, you know. But I found out that I became an off-brand. I used to sit on the bleachers with them, drinking coffee and eating them bad prison cookies, you know, and drinking coffee and reading this big book. They elected me secretary. And what we used to do was we used to support ourselves our own contribution. We used to collect stamps in order to buy coffee and cookies and buglers, roll them up cigarettes. This is what we do. They elected me secretary. And that's what I did. I continued to be a part of the thing, not knowing that being a secretary of a prison meeting, I have a responsibility that we're going to have these meetings. I got to collect these stamps. I got to collect the stamps, give them to our treasurer, make sure the treasurer goes to the commissary to go buy the stuff that we need, our cookies and coffee for our meeting that we're going to have. Now, you got to understand that Ghost has had a reputation with all the homies. In my block, I was the one that made decisions for the rest of my clique. And here I am hanging with these off-brands on the bleachers. And I said, well, what's going on, dog? He's like, man, I'm done. I'm done, homie. I can't do this no more. Here, take these knives. I don't want them no more. Here, take this wine and this drugs. I don't want them no more. You know, take all the women off my vision list. I don't want them no more. Cause I gotta change stuff. Because what you were giving me, you used to walk the track with me and tell me about yourself. See, because I'm a newcomer, and those who had more time than me to get out of my head, what they did was, I had no social skills. What they did for me was, we used to walk the track and they used to tell me their story. And the big book says there's nothing better than working with a newcomer. You have to identify with telling your story. So I identify with those off-brands who sat on them bleachers. And then I'm in my cell one particular time, and I'm getting involved in Alcoholics Anonymous in the literature. So I'm in my cell, my bunk, and I'm reading this book, and my homeboy come up and say, hey, Ghost, you know the homies are talking about you now. I'm like, what are they saying? They're saying you finally lost it. Yeah, because, you know, I turned in all the knives. No more drug selling, no more day room. I don't sit in that day room no more because that was a slippery place for me. I didn't have the courage to change that yet, so I just said, I'm not going there any longer. I used to sit back and walk the track with these off-brands, and we did what we did. So it would look like after 16 years that a man has been incarcerated that he has lost his mind. And I said, no, dog, tell the homeboys I found it. See, I found a solution, as the big book says. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confessions of our shortcomings, which this process requires to be successful. But we see that it really works in others, and therefore when we are approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us to do but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools and lay them at our feet. See, that's what they did for me. That's what Harley and Jose and Enrique, that's what they did for me. They gave me the simple kit of spiritual tools and they laid them at my feet. Now they gave me the tools, they gave me the prerequisite for me to build a beautiful life. That's what they did. They gave me the tools to build a life and saying, DJ, you ain't gotta drink no more, dog. You don't have to. You don't have to do this anymore, dog. Let the program work. I guarantee it will be different. Harley was my first sponsor, I guess, in the penitentiary. So here we go. I'm getting ready to touch down. I'm getting ready to get out of prison. I've been in prison 16 years, 10 months, and 3 days. 16 years, 10 months, and 3 days. I've been in prison. I got a phone call to call. I got two people to call. I got my mother, who never understood why I do. But I got Liz and H&I, hospitals and institutions. You know what happened? I'm at the phone booth, and they raised the price. It used to be a dime, now it's like 35 cents. You know? So from there, I call Liz, and she says, stay right there, baby, we'll come pick you up. They come in the minivan of these people that he's like, man, how do these people know each other? Because they're alcoholics. all different backgrounds in the minivan. And a little spot for me. So I'm out of prison, and I go, and they take me to a meeting, my first hour out of prison. And I am like, whoa. I'm thinking they're going to take me to eat. They took me to a meeting. Pretty wild. And I got the minivan with people, and I see all these pretty women, and I'm like, okay, I'm about to get me in a relationship right now. Relationship, that's what I want. You want me in a relationship, you know? But I'm like that newcomer. I don't know what to say. I just stare. I'm just staring. You guys remember that, right? When we were newcomers, we don't know how to say nothing to nobody. Just, you know, I don't have to say no woman. You know, how you doing? I like what you're doing with your hair. You know, nailed it. I like how your earrings match your shoes and your purse. That's really nice. I don't know. You know, I don't know how to say none of that stuff. So Liz, come out and say, hey, come on, put that out. Go to that podium and lead the meeting. I said, what you mean? She said, take the format and you say, welcome to this session, you know, of the meeting that we went to, and your name, and there, you know, are there any alcoholics present? And I said, hello, my name is DJ and I'm an alcoholic. And everybody said, it's different when you have 100 people versus 4. And everybody says, hi, DJ. I'm blown away. And I didn't like you people at first. Because why? You guys wouldn't say anything to me. Maybe because I'll be like this. You know, looking, you know, didn't no social skills. So I told my sponsor, when I found my sponsor, I'm like, man, the hell with them people, man. Them people ain't cool, man. They're like, what's wrong? I said, man, I don't even say nothing to you. He said, okay, what are we going to do? He said, man, you see that door right there, the entrance right there? I'm like, yeah. He said, I want you to stand right there and greet everybody to come to the door. Then everybody will know your name. I said, oh, what do you mean? He said, go stand by the door. And when people come in your direction, say, hello, I'm DJ, I'm an alcoholic, welcome. I felt funny. It's abnormal. You know, I'm saying welcome instead of saying, what's up, homie? Where you from? You know, what gang you from, homie? But I gotta say hello, welcome. My name is DJ and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm learning. You guys gave me social skills. That was the beginning of my social skills. You dig? And then from there, my sponsor is a beautiful man. He, when I heard the story that he left his wife and his kids and the alcoholism taking them, and there's a man named Gene Duffy and Frank Honeycutt who saved his life, my sponsor slept in a pasture with cows, and he used to go panhandle in front of the store, and he got his life back. He has 20-something years of sobriety. My sponsor is a beautiful man. And he tells me, he says, DJ, if you let me think for you for 12 months, your life will be different. If you let me think for you for 12 months, your life will be different. If you come with me and these men right here, your life will be different. Because all of us are of the same mindset. All of us are of the same mindset. And if you let us think for you for 12 months, you will begin to produce similar results. If you let us think for you, you will begin to produce similar results. But we need your willingness. You have to do this. You have to do this. If you want a new life. I said, okay, I'm willing. And he said, okay, first thing we got to do is you got to pull your pants up. Because remember, I'm 36 years old, but I went to prison as a teenager. So I had to pull the pants up, tuck the shirt in. My first suit that he bought me was $15. It was water resistant too. I wore that suit with pride. It was my first suit with suit and tie. And I can't stop wearing suits now because of him. You know? Just like I can't stop drinking ginger beer because of you. But we went through the steps. We started talking about the steps. We went through step one, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life become unmanageable. I internalized that. We talked about step two, you know, we stopped at step three. We talked about step four. Step four, I had to do step four was, you know, it was easy to blame other people because I can blame you for everything, you know. I can blame you for anything, you know. But when you do step four, you know, this is the cause, it's affected, you know, and my part in it. 17 pages on the legal yellow tab. We sat in the park and I finally found out that I have character defects. I finally found out that I'm not perfect. You know, we went through that and then we went to steps. We went to step six, the character defects and, you know, the shortcomings. And now it's time to make amends. It's time to make amends. I made amends to my family first and said, I'm sorry, Mama. I'm sorry you never had a son that was there for you. I told my sisters, I'm sorry you never had a brother that was there for you. I won't behave like that any longer. I told my grandmother, I'm sorry you didn't have a grandson. You know, I went to my neighborhood and knocked on everybody's door and said, I'm sorry for my contribution to the way the neighborhood is. I apologize. Some people accepted my apology, and some people said newcomers to newcomers. When I made my amends, some of the people I made my amends to said, I don't give a damn if you're sober. Get the hell away from me. And those are kind words that I'm saying right now. If I repeat them, they will probably delete this whole CD. Mr. J, Mr. Johnson cursed me out, and I sat right there and I listened to this man. I felt his pain. He said, this is the reason why my house is, I can't sell my house because of people like you and what you've done to our neighborhood. And I said, I'm sorry. He said, I let him get off his chest. And I said, I'm not going to repeat these behaviors anymore, Mr. J. I'm sorry. I don't give a damn if you're sober. It don't mean nothing to me. You guys caused too much wreckage. And that's the newcomer. Don't expect to be forgiven for the wreckage that we've caused just because we're sober. People don't care. Give a damn if you're sober or not. But I didn't. I let him get it off his chest. And through my actions, newcomers, through my actions, shows that I'm not going to behave like that no more. My words and my actions match. My words and my actions match. Our words and our actions have to match. I can't say I'm sober but continue to act like this. My words, my actions, they have to match. Am I perfect? No. I struggle, but I progress. I struggle, but I progress. It's meditation, prayer and meditation. The prayers are easy. Remember them. And then once you go through these steps, life becomes totally different. Now, you got to understand now that I'm a 36-year-old man on parole. I have a parole officer. My file was like this because I had a lot of transfers and stuff like that. So my prison file has been transferred out to society. Now, my parole officer was a supervisor of all the parole officers. So, you know, I had me a real hard nose. This dude had me taking parenting classes and I don't have any kids. I said, okay. He had me doing this and I said, okay. He had me doing that. I said, okay. So what happened from there was, he said, is there anything you have to say? But see, he didn't know, see, the key factor, the key ingredient is that he didn't know I had you guys. He didn't know I had you men grooming me to do something better. And I said, all right, I'm here to clear up the wreckage of my past, and that's it. I had 6 years paper. I only did 18 months. Jobs. I've changed oil. I've cleaned garages. I said, I will not earn one illegal penny, nickel, or dollar. I will support myself through my own contribution. And from there, just because I say I'm sober does not mean I will not be tested. I began to do all kinds of things. I said, I am too old to go to school. I just graduated in June. This is the second time I crossed the stage. The first time I crossed the stage was in elementary. The second time I crossed the stage, I was 41. I was like a big kid. My wife, Sue, she was there. I would cross the stage with my cap and gown, turned the tassel. I got my thing and said, I did it. That's because of what you guys did for me. I graduated, not a prestigious college, but I graduated college. And I became a licensed chemical dependency counselor. I have an office. That's what you guys given me. So this particular time, I was blessed with certain opportunities, and my parole officer sat back, and it was a Christmas parade, and he saw me, and said, I'm like, I'm on the float, and I'm waving to people, and he's on TV watching me, saying, oh my God, that is Mr. DJ. What the hell is he doing on a Christmas float on Channel 9, on a Christmas parade? And I spoke, and I look up, and my face is on the Jumbotron. I'm looking, and people are screaming. And I'm like, wow. And I'm like, yeah, just have a great, safe Christmas and Happy New Year. This was Christmas Eve. This was Christmas to 2008. So the following week, my PO called me and say, man, what were you doing this week? And I told him what I was doing. I'm doing volunteer work, blah this, blah that. So he said, man, was that you on TV? And I said, yeah. He said, man, you're a waste of my time because you've attended all classes even though you don't have any kids. You've kept employment and you've never gave us any dirty tests. Get you a lawyer. He said, what are you dressing a suit for? I said, because the mayor is going to give me an award. He's like, the mayor? I'm like, yeah. He said, what is he giving you an award for? I said, because I give myself selfishly in service to these at-risk youth. I taught them how to crochet. He said, crochet? I'm like, yeah, I'm really good at it. You know? He said, wow. See, this is what you guys have given me. You guys giving me a new lease on life. So what happens from there is, on Christmas Eve, I just got my first computer because when I went to the penitentiary, cell phones didn't exist and the internet didn't exist. So I'm trying to, you know, I just got my first email address. You know, I got an email, everybody. You know, I was excited. It's like getting a brand new car, you know. And so I get my phone call at 9:03 a.m. on Christmas Eve. And he says, yeah, now this sounds funny. Happy holidays. This is DJ. And so, what's up, homie? You know, I'm like, yeah, what's going on, Mr. Brett? I'm like, what's going on? He's like, what's the best gift you can get on Christmas Eve? An ex-felon. I said, I don't know. He said, how about your walking papers? How about a pardon? And I said, what do you mean? He said, man, the same judge that gave you the 20 years. He said, if Mr. Brett been doing all this, if he's been doing all this, then, and you're the supervisor of the probation and you're requesting that he gets off parole 4 years early, then we're gonna grant that motion. And said, give me your email, I'm going to send you the motion. That means, I said, what do you mean? He said, man, you are a free man. This was Christmas Eve, 2008. I've been under supervision since I was 13 years old, probation since I was 13 years old. And here I am now, 40, I was 37 years old. And next you know, I ain't got no paper. My paper was supposed to end October 31st, 2012. So therefore, I'm not supervised anymore. I ain't got to do this no more. I got a clean slate. I can do what I want to do. I ain't got to go to meetings no more. You know, I ain't got to hang with them dudes no more. They serve their purpose. That's what my disease is telling me. It serves its purpose. I ain't got to be here no more. You know, forget them. I ain't got to do this no more. My disease saying, DJ, let me get you to myself again, baby boy. I need to get you to myself again. I miss you. I comforted you. Let's celebrate. Let's go drink a Miller's Light. Just some light right now. Come on, baby. let me spend some time with you again. That's what my disease is telling me. I called my sponsor immediately and saying, my broke brain is telling me to hell with this. He says, go to a meeting and get another commitment. Go help somebody. Tell them what it's like on the sunny side of the street. So, you know, all this other thing started happening. I got a chance to be blessed with hidden talents that I did not know. I continued to push forward. I told my sponsor, you know what, I want to go into these jails now. He said, fill in the paperwork. I said, but I don't think they're going to give it to me because I spent half my life in prison. He said, fill out the paperwork and leave results alone. So I filled the paperwork out, dog. And you know what the funny thing about it was? I get a call from the sheriff's department and say, Mr. DJ, can you come down to the sheriff's station? I'm like, what? I ain't got no warrants? What? No, you've been approved to come inside the prisons now. Oh my God. I get a chance to carry the message to where I received it. I need to bring me a pink box in there. You know? This is the beautiful part. This is the beautiful part of it. You dig what I'm saying? So from there I've been doing jails and prisons since 2009. I get a chance to carry the message to where I received it. I go with people who've never been to prison. They say, DJ, I can't go there to no jail and carry no message because I ain't never been to prison. I say, are you an alcoholic? But yeah, but I ain't never been to jail. Are you an alcoholic? Yeah. I said, it's your responsibility to carry the message to those who suffer. And I go to jail for an hour, you know, and leave there happy and look at the prison, look at the guard towers and saying, if it wasn't for God and you men and women, I would be out there looking out these windows. So my life has been totally amazing. I get a chance to do things I've only imagined doing, you know. I do music. I found out I have a talent for music, and I've done shows in big places, which I'm very grateful for. And what I'm there for is like, hey man, they're doing this, it's sponsored by this. And I'm like, he's like, what are you there for? Do I said, I'm there to perform for 45 minutes. He said, do 45 minutes and then go home. And then all of a sudden I got a chance to do television. I never thought about doing television, you know. I like watching television, never thought about being on it, you know. I'm especially in handcuffs. You dig what I'm saying? So this time I got a chance to do it on the show, and it ran for 3 years. I just got killed off last season. You know, this is amazing of this kind of stuff that I get a chance to do. You know, I get a chance to have a beautiful relationship with a beautiful woman who turned me down 4 times. You know, and I said, I'm gonna marry that woman. And proposed to her in New York. You know, it was 18 degrees outside, and she said yes, you know, but turned me down 4 times. She told me about rejection, accepting no, you know. Be active in your own rescue. Develop a strong desire to serve other people. Keep commitments. Read our literature. Give this stuff away. It's no for you to keep it. If you feel uncomfortable, get with us. You will feel comfortable. It won't feel so abnormal. It'll feel normal. Just because we get blessed with material stuff, we have to increase our service work. Just because we're having financial insecurities, we still have to increase our service work. The fear of financial insecurities, the fear should leave. Financial insecurities sometimes don't, you know. But again, that fear, when we operate our fear, we look at the world differently. We act different. We talk different. We feel different. And that fear will fight to stay alive. But once we develop that connection and take that lead helmet off and keep that connection with our higher power, that fear will dwindle and we will begin to have faith in a higher power. Again, if I want you to leave this room and you want to stay, because of all of us, you cannot stay. We will be your higher power until you find a higher power of your own. From life in the maze to an amazing life, it's all an inside job. I want you guys to dream out loud. I am sad that I have to go and leave and go back home. I love you guys, and there's nothing you can do about it. But I love you guys. I feel so welcome. My wife and I, we feel so welcome. I want to talk to everybody. And I will make sure that after this meeting is over today, please take my information down. I want to keep in contact with each and all of you guys. I would like to do that. You guys are my tribe. You make me feel comfortable. They have literature out there. Go buy it up. Give it to a newcomer. Take somebody through the steps and through this book. Teach a newcomer how to shake a hand to a total stranger. If somebody don't look familiar to you, extend your hand to them. Make them feel comfortable like you made me and my wife Sue feel comfortable. And once we do all this stuff right here, and once we read our literature, it's going to state that there's nothing more wonderful than seeing a 12-step job well done. To see the eyes of men and women open with wonder. To see men and women move from dark to light. To see whole lives filled with meaning and purpose. To see whole families reassembled. And to see the alcoholic outcast be received back into his or her community with full citizenship. This is what the program tells you. I'm telling you what I know. I'm telling you what, from my experience, what I know because of what this program has given me. This program will grow. Our lives will become filled with meaning and purpose. We will have everything that we want when God is ready to give it to us. Not when I want it, but when God is ready to give it to us. I am blessed and I am fortunate. I would like to thank Nick. I would like to thank Belinda. I would like to thank Ash. I would like to thank Cam. I would like to thank
Adrian.
I would like to thank all of you guys. I would like to thank all those who set these chairs up. I would like to thank all those who set the refreshments up. I would like to thank all those who set the literature tables up. I would like to thank all those who set the dance up for us. I would like to thank all of you for being here and giving me this opportunity and life-changing experience to come down to Melbourne. I say that right? To come down and carry this message of change. And I pray that when this day is over and this meeting is over, that you guys leave with something. I will never forget you. I want to give you all of my information. Hopefully we can see each other again at the AA campus. My name is DJ, and I'm an alcoholic.